This stock and commodity report is made possible with support of the Friends of WILL and Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
From Giovanni's Restaurant and Conference Center in Rockford, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 11th day of March. We're at the Illinois Soybean Summit. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzula of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Atchison, Kansas, and Bryce Knorr from Farm Futures Magazine. He's their senior grains analyst. Will be here too. We'll also take up the weather forecast today. We'll have Bryce Anderson from DTN Progressive Farmer. The two Bryces, of course, making presentations this morning at the Illinois Soybean Summit. And then, as we close out our half hour together, we'll take a look again at the weather forecast, that with Eric Snyder Snodgrass from AgriBolt, right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's take a look at the numbers as they finished up in Chicago on this Friday afternoon. Futures in the corn pit were higher, up 3.5 cents in the nearby March at $3.66 a bushel. May at $3.65, up 2.25. July up 2 at $3.69.5. And December corn at $3.82¾, a penny and 3/4 higher. Next year's March at $3.91¼, up 1.5 cents. From the soy complex, March beans at $8.88, up 6.25 on the end of the day. May futures at $8.95¾, 6.5 higher. July at $9.01½, up 6¾. And August soybeans, $9.03½, 6¾ higher. November beans at $9.06¾, finished 6 cents higher for the new crop. January at $9.11, up 5¾. Bean meal for the day at $2.72, up $1.80. The May at $2.73.50, up $1.60. And the bean oil, 52 cents higher at $31.63 on the afternoon. Wheat futures soft red in the March at $4.69¾, a penny and 3/4 lower. July at $4.82¾, down a half. And the hard red July unchanged today at $4.93 even. Live cattle futures from Chicago in the April at $139.77½, up $1.47½. June at $128.55, 92½ higher. And the April feeder cattle for the day at $162.80, $1.20 higher. Lean hogs, April contract, $71.90 per 100 pounds, down 27½ cents. The May futures there at $79.25, a dime lower. We're today at the Giovanni's Restaurant and Conference Center in Rockford, Illinois, from the Illinois Soybean Summit. This is Illinois Public Media.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
For the Illinois State Water Survey, this is State Climatologist Jim Angel. March so far has been almost 6 degrees above average. Rainfall has been running at the half-inch range across the state, except in the southeast corner, which received amounts closer to an inch. The Water Survey operates a soil temperature network with 19 sites across the state at 2, 4, and 8 inches. Soil temperatures have been climbing steadily over the last several weeks. The 2-inch soil temperatures have been running in the low to mid-40s in the north, to mid to upper 40s and low 50s in central Illinois, and the low to mid-50s in the south. You can find these data by searching on the web for Illinois soil temps. The forecast for this weekend and next week is for temperatures to remain above average for this time of year. There's a chance of rain this weekend, however, the amounts are expected to be low. Things could get interesting next Tuesday and Wednesday as a very large low-pressure system moves through the region, bringing widespread rain and high winds. And it's also the time of year to start thinking about severe weather, so stay tuned to your local forecast for watches and warnings. Remember that a watch means the conditions are favorable, while a warning means that they're actually occurring on the ground. After the storm midweek, the temperatures are expected to remain above average out to the next 10 days, and rainfall is expected to be above average as well. This is Jim Angel, Illinois State Climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon. It is the 11th day of March. I'm in Rockford at the Soybean Summit. This is the last one for the year. Turning our attention directly to the marketplace, Mike Zuzulo is on the line. He's in Atchison, Kansas, at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. First, Mike, thanks for making the drive Tuesday to the all-day Ag Outlook at the Beef House. I think it was a great success.
Had a great time, Todd, and took a lot of great questions on the corn panel. You could tell the producers were really locked into the meeting.
Absolutely. So today we have another rally in the marketplace, and this has been a good week. We'll start not with corn, but with soybeans, up another nickel to 6 or 7 cents as we close out the time. And you and I are talking at about 1:04 in the afternoon, so we're not quite live on this one, but should be a good week and a good finish for the marketplace.
Yeah, in fact, new 2016 highs for the November beans. You've got several things working in your favor. And obviously, we started out the week with the outside markets, the dollar and the crude oil helping us. They finished the week helping us and supporting us in the commodity sector as a whole. Specifically for the beans, the dollar real currency exchange rate hitting a six-month low, helping to offset any kind of harvest pressure mindset. Also, Sao Paulo is talking about flooding to the point where it's killed about 15 people in southern Brazil at this stage of the game. And so that's slowing harvest, and it's also creating some real roadblocks to getting ships loaded. So a couple big things: currency, weather, helping to keep the South American harvest from showing up in the price action this week. I think also here domestically, strong rains in Louisiana, Mississippi, flooding there, also talking about slowing the planting down in our own Delta states here. So add all that up, and November beans have hit the 2.37 mark against Dease corn, highest since May of last year.
Can it continue to follow through on Monday then?
I think it can, but I think it really needs the help of the corn and the wheat, and I think those two are linked together. And, you know, in the wheat market, I think you have some support from the crude oil. I think you also have some weather support. The 6 to 10-day weather forecast calls for dry weather in the hard red wheat belt, and actually in parts of key parts of central Kansas, 7 days out, we're potentially looking at lows of 28 degrees. That would not be good for wheat that has broken dormancy for several weeks now in some parts of Kansas and Oklahoma. So I think, yes, the beans can go on up. My next target would be around 917 to 920, Todd. That's a key number to be watching. That probably gets you up against the 200-month moving average in lead month beans. That's going to be a big line in the sand as we go into the end of March and into the acreage and stocks report. I think I'd be more nervous about beans falling back than corn at this stage, simply because the higher the beans go above $9 in futures, I think swing acres are moving over to beans at this point.
Are you moving old and new crop soybeans then? Are you making recommendations on both of those or not?
Yeah, if we hit 917 on the new crop, that would probably put our May contract up around 910, and that would be some additional sales would be recommended at that point too. The amount of sales in new crop beans is really predicated upon some of these other longer-term technicals, and quite frankly, it's really predicated upon whether we turn a sell signal into the monthly dollar chart. If we get a sell signal in the monthly chart in the dollar, and I think it's a valid one, we could have 2 to 3 months of weaker dollar, and so we don't want to oversell and let this market run a bit.
Yeah, so the dollar is a bit higher today. You think that signal will come at any time point in the future? And the crude oil, too, has been strong this week.
Yeah, it's hard to believe. We're about 55% off our February lows at this point in crude oil, and we're about over 30% off our lows in the Baltic Freight Index. I think the USDA report, along with this kind of move up in the prices, shows us we have demand coming back into the market. So my take on the dollar is that between the pennant formation and the stochastics, this end of March time period will give us a fairly valid signal.
Anything else that we need to talk about for producers today that you've been watching on the macroeconomics or in the domestic marketplace?
Well, I would just add to the idea of the USDA supply-demand report. World corn stocks to use at 21%, about the same as last year now. Coarse grain stocks to use actually 1% plus below last year. And world soybean stocks to use shrank to 25% on USDA's report. That's down about 1% versus last year. So while USDA kept the U.S. numbers relatively well supplied, world numbers came down, and most of that was because of increased demand. So that was a good thing to see on this report this week.
And when you talked to farmers, or are they thinking on the acreage report for themselves that they will be more inclined to plant corn acres or soybean acres?
They're going to stick with rotation, but what I have found is that because of the lower price of corn, they're not going to put on as much fungicide. They're not going to probably put on as much nitrogen. So the acres could be there to some degree, but I don't think your national yield is going to be there. Now, on swing acres in Illinois and Indiana, as I said before, you go above $9 and you get closer to $9.20 in November beans, and that gets you close to $9 cash. Producers are looking at that and saying, okay, if I've got an extra 60 or an extra 80 that could go either way, I'm going to go ahead and put it in beans and save some money and book the $9. Won't get you profitable, but it really cuts your losses pretty nicely.
Interesting to think about both of those things, in particular on the corn number, that it's easier to cut cost out of corn because, of course, they're higher cost production anyway, and the producers may stick with that. Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate you taking the time with us today, and again, for being at the All Day Ag Outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. And you and I will be together again a week from tomorrow, Saturday, not this week, but next week in Chicago, or Joliet, that is, at the Chicago Farmland Forum, and I'm looking forward to it, too.
Looking forward to it, too, Todd. Thank you for the invitation there to the Beef House. It's always great to be with you.
Mike Zuzalo, of course, is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. This is the Closing Market Report. Do visit our website, willag.org, willag.org. Check our schedule out. Next week, we'll be out and about in a lot of places. On Monday night, we'll be right here in Champaign County at the Farm Bureau for one of our Ag Outlook panels. It'll be myself and Brian Stark from the Andersons making that presentation Thursday of next week. That's the 17th, St. Patrick's Day, in Taylorville, Illinois. And that one's open, sponsored by the Christian County Farm Bureau. And then on Saturday next week, I'll be out as well, and we'll be at the Chicago Farmers Farmland Forum in Joliet, Illinois. Bryce Anderson now joins us. He's with me today in Rockford at the Illinois Soybean Association Soybean Summit. Made a presentation about the weather. The bottom line for you from the one slide I made real important look at and put actually up on my at Commodity Week Twitter account already is that trend line yields probably are the top end of the range for the year.
Yeah, I think that's right, Todd, because we're going to, in all likelihood, have a pretty wet spring in much of the eastern Corn Belt, south into the Gulf Coast and the southeast. We're already seeing that. So I think a wetter spring with planting delays is going to be a part of that. And then a cool temperature trend. So that, you know, that doesn't do crops a whole lot of good getting started. Then in the summertime, we're going to see a warmer to hotter temperature pattern than we've seen the last 2 years, along with variable precipitation. Illinois is going to kind of be on both sides of the precip trend. And I, with those kind of environmental hurdles to work with, so to speak, I think that that's going to take its toll on how crops perform this year.
Is the bulk of that coming up front for you in terms of what the top end looks like? So it's the wet spring that causes the problem for the top end of the range?
Yeah, I think it is. We've seen that that, you know, when we have problems getting crops planted on time, that it definitely shows up in performance. And you know, unfortunately, last year, 2015, really proved that out here in Illinois, where the areas in the central and eastern part of the state that got so wet had a definitely lower corn production result than areas that were able to at least get their crop planted by June.
What's your thought about South America for the coming growing season? Not for the one that's being harvested now, but for the 2016-17 growing season. I know it's a very long way out.
Well, the Pacific is moving away from a very strong El Nino, and it is more and more likely that when we get into September, October, and then on through the balance of this year, that the Pacific waters are going to cool enough that La Nina takes over. When La Nina is in effect, that is a definitely drier weather maker for Argentina and southern Brazil. And I think that we're going to have an issue with crop weather in South America this coming year that kind of takes them away from being able to repeat some of the terrific production that they're coming out with now.
Bryce, thanks so much.
You're welcome, Todd.
Bryce Anderson is with DTN Progressive Farmer. We're in Rockford, Illinois today at the Illinois Soybean Summit. This is the last one for the year. Bryce Knorr made a presentation this morning on the markets. He's with Farm Futures and Farm Progress Companies, a Penton company. Thanks, Bryce, for being with us to talk about the markets. Over the last several weeks, in fact, since last fall, many of our brokers and analysts, and Daryl Good included among that, have said, make sure on the old crop, that which is in the bin, you reward the rallies. And I take it from the presentation this morning that you think that that's really important and maybe even more important today than it was back in October and November. And you have to separate old and new crop from one another.
Right. I think really have to have a lot of discipline now in getting rid of the old crop inventory of corn and soybeans. Producers, they have a lot of it around. My surveys have shown more than usual, and it's too much of a risk to hold that into summer waiting for a weather rally. Even though I'm somewhat optimistic that those rallies will come, they may not come in time for the July futures contracts. So that means you're going to be having to, market off the September or the Dece, and you're going to be paying storage even if it's on farm. There's a cost to that, and it's a big gamble to bet basically two crops or a crop and a half on a summer weather rally when we have large supplies of corn, soybeans, and wheat all around the world.
How do supply-driven markets generally work over time?
Well, typically in these normal years, when we have tight supplies, we can have a rally to buy acres in March and April. We aren't going to get that this year because the supplies are not tight. There's the ratio of new crop soybeans to corn is 2.36 to 1. That's the long-term average. So the market's telling you that basically neither of these crops are going to work that well. So in the supply markets, we can get weather rallies, but particularly corn, if we don't get that rally, we can just drift lower, particularly once the crop is in. We can just grind lower. And I don't look for this particular rally that we're seeing now in either corn or soybeans to go a whole lot further. I think beans, I've been recommending selling at $9 July and $9.20 July. I think that's about all this market may have until summer. For corn, we may get a little bit more, but fellas who are looking for $4 corn on the board aren't going to get it, I don't think, because we just have too much supply, and the end users don't have to bid up the market. What we've been seeing, particularly the last 2 weeks, has just been short covering. The hedge funds had a record bearish bet on in agricultural commodities, corn, soybeans, wheat, you name it, and they've been liquidating some of those positions, and that's giving us a nice little bounce.
Next week, farmers will have a couple of days to sign up or to adjust their crop insurance still. What are your suggestions there and how to use it as a risk management tool for the new crop?
Yeah, I think particularly in Illinois, where your yields tend to be better, the RP makes a lot of sense, and probably buying that up to 85%. There are parts of the country where RP is extremely expensive, and for those growers, I think you can take a look at maybe, and I stress maybe, just buying yield protection and then covering the upside perhaps with call options. I've been recommending that producers pick up a little call option insurance, maybe buying a December $4 call, selling a December $5 call, doing that for about 15 cents. Trying to give yourself some upside, both if you're going ahead and selling cash corn, old crop corn, and also to add further incentive to make new crop sales. So I think you have to be fairly cautious.
Would that call option strategy be good across the country no matter what you were doing with your crop insurance, or is that just for those in the marginal producing area?
Yeah, I think everybody can do that. I think it, you know, for crop insurance, even if you buy RP, you probably need some call option insurance to add to that muscle and basically to recoup some of the loss that you may see in ARC payments. I think this year, particularly in northern Illinois, where you saw some potential 2015 ARC payments, looks like they could be $95, $100 in some cases. That's probably going to be, you know, not going to be the case in for the 2016 crop. We know that that the base price is going to be less, and if your yields are average, so will the payment. So, I think my revenue models, when you start to vary prices and yields, and when you look at the profit per acre, indicate that you really need some more upside protection. You don't have to spend a lot of money on it, but I do think you need to spend maybe 15, 20 cents on some type of call option strategy.
And finally, could you walk me through the few presentation slides that you made on China at the beginning of your morning report today here at the Illinois Soybean Summit, and what your thought process is there?
Yeah, basically, we're still in the first year of this Chinese crisis. The government there has been instituting a whole series of reforms. They've been trying to slow growth and transition their economy from one driven on exports to more consumer-oriented economy, service sector, and also making transitions supposedly to becoming a more market-based economy. These types of changes, it's like turning around a barge. You just don't do it in a minute. And financial crises tend not to just go away quickly. They tend to linger. I think this one probably has a couple more years to run. And so that's going to continue to be a drag on the market and make investors nervous. And when investors get nervous, they don't like to buy commodities. We have seen some buying in crude oil. There's a more positive attitude there. That's hopefully going to bring some more money back to the agricultural sector. But this China thing, I don't think is going to go away quickly. Their People's Congress is over. The government has basically been buying the stock market, propping it up. So they wouldn't get embarrassed during the Congress. That buying should disappear a little bit next week. And if they start making more broad-based moves with their currency, that'll make investors even more nervous. So we still have to wake up every morning and check first to see what China is doing before we really talk about anything else.
Bryce Knorr, of course, is with Farm Futures. You can read him in Farm Futures magazine. Where else might people be able to find you, whether that's on Twitter or a blog, online?
Well, of course, we have a website, farmfutures.com. Folks are always amazed that we don't charge anything for it because there's so much information there. They can sign up for twice daily newsletters, and I also write reviews on what's happening with other markets, corn, soybeans, wheat, also the stock market, interest rates, fertilizer, which is especially popular, and also the energy sector tracking diesel and propane prices.
Thanks so much.
You bet.
That, of course, is Bryce Knorr. He's with Farm Futures magazine.
Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
It's National Oatmeal Nut Waffle Day. Waffles have been around at least since the time of the Greeks. The Dutch brought the waffle to the U.S. in the 1620s. The patent for the first waffle iron in the U.S. was issued in 1869. The cast iron plates sat on top of wood or gas stoves. The first electric waffle maker was produced by General Electric in 1911. By the way, the waffle iron was the inspiration for a new sole for running shoes in 1971. The company was Blue Ribbon Sports, which today is better known as Nike. On this day in agricultural history in 1791, Samuel Mulliken of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, received a patent for a machine to thresh corn and grain. He was the first person in history to receive more than one patent. We don't know what the machine looks like. The patent was destroyed in a fire in 1836. In 1845, self-rising flour was invented by Henry Jones of Bristol. The flour was an instant hit. A year later, in 1846, Jones was appointed purveyor of patent flour and biscuits to Queen Victoria. Jones spent a number of years trying to convince the Royal British Navy to use his flour. Eventually, he was successful, but only with the help of Florence Nightingale. And in 2007, on this date, the U.S. moved daylight savings time 3 weeks earlier than in previous years in the hopes that it would conserve energy. The concept was first introduced during World War II in Great Britain as a coal-conserving measure. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, getting ready to wrap up the day here at the Illinois Soybean Summit in Rockford. We have a farmer panel yet to come. Right now, let's turn our attention to the weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass. He is with Agrible. First, Eric, thank you so much for coming over to the All Day Ag Outlook on Tuesday. Your program was one of the highlights of the day. I do want to ask you about the rain that we've had, because we were supposed to get some in the north, and it seemed to peter out and not follow us that way. Tell me about the rainfall, where it did happen, and why it didn't make it all the way to the north.
Yeah, these are great questions. Let's give you the setup. Basically, you know, we have this thing called the jet stream, and it's moving all the time. It's kind of meanders north and south, but it really streams from the west to the east. Well, that jet stream took this hard dip south and hit right over really central Mexico. And the moment that it got down there, it cut itself off. In other words, this little piece of the jet stream, we call it a cutoff low, sat and spun there. Well, as it did that, it kept funneling moisture north. And this is what we talked about at the Ag Outlook. We said, hey, big stream of moisture to the north. And earlier in the weekend and then the beginning of the week, most models had that moisture surging all the way up to south of Chicago. Well, as the system started to evolve, there was a surface front that was draped across Illinois that just slid south about 100 miles. And that pushed that heavier rain south about 100 miles. So here we are in Champaign. I was expecting better than an inch of rain. We didn't get anywhere near that. We got rain, but we didn't get nearly that much because that front slid south. Now, if you were south, you were in serious trouble. There are parts of Louisiana right now, a big section of Louisiana that's measured more than a foot of rain, and a big chunk right in the middle that's received over 20 inches of rain. And just to give you some perspective, Todd, if Champaign over the last week would have received 20 inches of rain, that would have been a half year's worth of rainfall for us. The flooding around this town would have just been epic. Every viaduct would have been full. You know, think about Green Street here on campus. You would have had water in the storefronts. It would have been a horrible, horrible mess. But that moisture down south as it pushed in really is going to cause some problems for them as they think about getting into the early part of their growing season. It's going to really push things back. It's going to take a while for that water to go away. So yeah, big, big problem south of here.
Do we have more rain coming over the weekend?
Yeah, we got a shot, another shot of rain, actually from the same system trying to get up here Saturday afternoon, Saturday night into Sunday morning. And then after this all clears out, there's even another shot coming in on Wednesday. And actually, that's a good transition for us to talk about what this warmth is going to do. We've been very warm. March has started off pretty darn warm for us. We've had temperatures in the upper 50s, in the 60s. And by the way, maybe some point as far north as Champaign, by midweek next week, I think Monday, Tuesday, maybe early Wednesday, we might be pushing 70 degrees. But things do shift as we approach, you know, astronomical spring. So around March 20th, 21st, 22nd, we are going to be seeing a pattern shift where we have more of the trough in the jet stream coming over the central U.S. That takes our temperatures back down to where they kind of more typically are this time of year, maybe highs in the upper 40s and lower 50s. And just to kind of give you perspective, you know, we lose an hour of sleep on Sunday. On that same day, the average high for Champaign, for example, is 49 degrees. So we've been really warm. We're going to go back toward, you know, cooler than average. But the good news is, cooler than average at the end of March, doesn't mean sub-freezing temperatures usually during the day. So, yeah, it's going to cool down, but it's not going to go back into, like, Arctic blast kind of temperatures. So, yeah, that's what we're looking at kind of in the long run.
Thanks so much, Eric. I do appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
Eric Snodgrass is with AgriBolt. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.